Croeso I Amplify. Welcome to Amplify, stories about youth music in Wales. Straeon am gerddoriaeth ieuenctid yng Nghymru. Each month, we'll be asking a question about music and young people in Wales, inviting guests from the music sector in to discuss their work and hearing thoughts from the members of the Wales Music Youth Forum. This month, we're asking, what age should we start enjoying music?
Hello, everyone. It's lovely to be here today on Anthem's podcast, Amplify. My name is Ify Wobi. I'm part of Anthem as a board member, and I'm a pianist, composer, musician. I am your host for Amplify today, and joining us is a very special guest, Helen Woods, composer for Tiddly Prom, music animateur, and performer.
Hello, thank you. Yes, my name is Helen Woods, and I do a lot of work with the Tiddly Prom. So lots of children know me as Cherry, or Cherry Pie is my full name. And I work as a composer across dance and opera, but I love to specialise in early years music.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here with you, Helen. A bit about your work as well. For the Welsh National Opera, you were commissioned to compose a real princess, an opera for 4 to 5 year olds. And Helen was commissioned with her eldest daughter to create a bilingual music and movement performance called Barod for nurseries. Helen is a specialist in music for and with under fives, but is experienced in working on a huge variety of music productions with all ages, including works of the English National Ballet on their Dance for Parkinson's program and leading a choir for younger people with dementia. And also a bit about you, you're a published poet and a Javanese gamelan tutor. It's lovely to have you on the program today. Amazing credentials.
I should say the published poet bit. It's 4 poems in one children's anthology, but I was very proud of Piggy Wiggy.
Amazing. Oh, it sounds amazing. We have to have a copy of it. Our theme for Anthem's Amplifies podcast this month is, what age should we start enjoying music? Helen, I'd like to ask you more about the work you do, because you work particularly with early years. Tell us more about your work.
What I'd like to do, actually, first of all, is answer the question with the best quote I've ever heard, which was by Kodai when he was asked about when children should start hearing music. And he'd answered it and then changed it to 9 months before the birth of the mother. And I'm a strong believer of that. So children that I've worked with, I think the youngest is 3 days old, was the youngest child ever at a performance of mine, which was just glorious. And it was a Christmas show where I was being Cherry Pie. So there was a lot of music and this baby just took it all in as much as 3-day-old babies do. But also as Cherry Pie, I'd go and steal a baby, which also meant I got to cuddle with it. So, you know, that was great as well. So talking about the Tiddly Prom, that came out of David Baxter had commissioned us to create this with him as part of the Welsh Proms. There'd always been a children's prom which was aimed at children from about 7 up. And so there was sort of a gap within the proms, where with a family prom, you'd be saying, oh, listen to this music and imagine this picture, think of this. And what we wanted to do was introduce children at a younger age to the idea of orchestral instruments and singing and music. And rather than say, imagine this, it's a, here's a story. So we would create a story. So that would be me working with storyteller Richard Berry, who played the role of Bert. And we would create these stories that would have songs in there and instrumental pieces in order to take them on a journey and for them to appreciate it in a way that they can appreciate it at the age of 3. Some children you could take to an orchestral concert at three and they'll sit through the whole thing. But others just wouldn't. And, you know, that's not what they want to do at three. So it's finding different ways in. So for a workshop situation, it's really lovely to be doing something where you can go really quiet and really get them to listen to a piece of music, but also remember that if they are three, they need to be jumping around and appreciating it through their whole bodies. That may involve a bit of running, which, you know, I'm not opposed to a bit of running around. But it's kind of gearing it to what age appropriate it is. And that's not to say that a child younger won't appreciate something, but it's not expecting them to.
Oh my gosh, it's amazing to hear about your work from early as three, you know.
Yeah.
That young, it's incredible the ways that you open music to them, the way that it's accessible to them. Do you think it's a real, they can really appreciate it, yes, you know, from as young as that?
I think they can. Yeah. I mean, obviously, since COVID, there's been some disappointments in my life where, because I love to watch children growing, but I had a child at the class that I was doing at the Ely Children's Centre who was about 9-10 months old when she started coming to the class. And I would just start singing my song Big Black Cloud, which involves your arms going out and you leaning to one side and leaning to the other. And I would just start it, and she would put her arms out and she would do it. And so that kind of appreciation, even at that age, it was like, I now associate this with this and I want to do it. And they come running into the room and sit down and they want to do it. So because any child under the age of five has not learnt the etiquette of being polite around listening to music or joining in with something. So if you haven't engaged them, they let you know, not in a, this isn't really doing it for me, but just, I'm going to go and play on the stairs now. You know, that, this door handle is way more interesting than you, Helen. So then you kind of go, oh, okay, all right. And maybe that door handle is really interesting, or you have to kind of go, this isn't working then, let's do something else. And that's where I think part of the tests are, is the fact that your audience isn't ever going to be just polite to you.
Fantastic. Wow, it's so interesting to hear the different ways to get, you know, the children on board to be interested in the music. And, you know, it's a lot of physical activity and being there with them, engaging with them, like the movements you were saying, it's incredible. It's a different way of working. And like you say, not everyone's going to be, you know, they have the etiquette to be polite. And honestly, Tiddly Prom, what an amazing piece of work. And anyone who has children should really check out your piece of work, Helen, because it's a way of engaging with children in the most interesting and wonderful art, which is music. So the next question, I think, why is it important for early years children to have music in their lives?
I think there are two things. It's like, I think that music should be part of everybody's life, because I'm slightly biased, but I do believe that that musical experience, whether that's playing or listening, enhances mood, morale, your mental health, your physical health. So listening to music whilst running, doing, you know, all of those things are assisting us in life. So I think music's very, very important. But I think it's also really important for all children. My dissertation at university was the experience, musical experience of a preschool child. And that was the title of it, which was an unusual title to choose at Dartington College, because that tended to be a slightly more way out there. And one of the things that I discovered was that at that point, back in the early 90s, what children were experiencing then very much depended on where they were educated and what they were surrounded by. I'd been to visit sessions where music was only being used to help get them quiet for circle time and their drink, you know. And it's kind of like, well, at least they're doing it then, you know. At least they're getting something from it.
Wonderful. Like, and I love how you say music should be for everyone. Like, and you were talking about the background. Like, it shouldn't be, you know, kind of disqualified to people from a certain background or, yeah. You know, do you think, yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think partly it comes from my own experience of being so wonderfully encouraged musically, particularly by my mum and my dad. My dad taught me the recorder when I was four, even though he couldn't play a note. He got a book and a recorder, and we would do it before he went to work. And he taught me to read music. He's very mathematical, so he just worked it out. But it was very much from a practical point of view. And then I had a piano when I was seven because my mum had seen me tapping my fingers on the back doorstep, and she said, would you like a piano? Because she had always wanted one. I was thinking about this the other day, that my mum, as soon as my piano arrived, and it was a second-hand one that lasted about a year before it died, my mum was the first person to teach me something, which was, you know, the chopsticks.
Love chopsticks.
Yeah, I love a bit of chopsticks. So yeah. My mum taught me that because her friend at school, who hadn't really wanted lessons so much, had taught my mum that. And so my mum hadn't touched a piano for however many years that would have been. So she was, you know, so probably hadn't played a piano for about 30 years. And that childhood memory of playing that, she'd remembered it and taught it to me. And I just think, what if she had had those opportunities to learn music? But because she valued it, I then had the encouragement to do it. And it's just not every child is as, you know, my mum wasn't as lucky, but then she brought it for me. And that's why I think it's about everyone equal.
Yeah, exactly. That's wonderful to hear about your history and, you know, the muscle memory of, like, you know, when you're playing the piano and it just comes back to you and you're able to teach it. She didn't have that, but she wanted you to experience the joy of it. But it should be accessible for everyone. There should be projects where there's, like, lessons for them to engage, and I'm sure there's lots of things that you're doing, Helen,
well,
with that.
I'm trying to, yeah. And there's one of the things when I'm doing songwriting in primary schools, there's an exercise that I'll do to create melody where every child gets to play a note on the piano, just because I think it's really important that they all get to play it, you know, just to have a go, because even if it's just one note once, then they've had a go and it might just spark something of, ooh, yeah, that's not something that other people do. It's something I want to do. So
exactly, that inspiration. Like, do you know how much it means to a child to just play that one note? And it's just, yes.
I had a beautiful moment with a class of, they must have been year four or year five, and we'd been songwriting, and it's like, right, let's just write a new melody. And they all lined up, and they played one note each. I wrote down the notes and I said, right, now I'm going to play the whole tune that you've given me by playing a note on the piano. So I played it to them. And about halfway through, this child turned to the teacher and went, that was my note. Which was just the funniest thing ever. It was just like, that was my note. And that just meant something. I don't even know whether he was right. I don't know whether that was his note, but it didn't matter because it was important to him.
Wow, amazing. Well, it's really fabulous to hear all this work and a bit more about your work. What have been the results, you know, with early years and a bit of successes and a bit of, tell us about your journey, you know?
Well, I suppose, I mean, the fact that we started, the Tiddly Prom began its life in 2004 and we're still creating things. So I suppose that I'm just waiting for the point where it's the children of the children We're not that far off that, and that's a bit frightening. I think that's one of the successes, the being in a situation where you go into a nursery and that they already know one of my songs, and it's the first time I've gone in there. That's a proud moment when you go somewhere and they're singing Whoops Banana, which I think will be one of the songs that I think that'll be on my gravestone. She wrote Whoops Banana.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, wow. I just love that little, on the, you know, to be remembered
yeah.
for.
One of the things that I've been told by parents a lot is that the parents have enjoyed it and they've gone on a journey together and have had a lot of fun creating it. So I think I'd like to, in terms of what I do, that it's not sat still. So I will still sing Whoops Banana, but we'll always be writing new songs. We're creating new things that are relevant for that time and also relevant because, you know, the porridge song only got written because there was a child that liked porridge. So I hope about the always sort of being able to listen to children and go with what they want, which sometimes gets me into trouble. I did have a nursery teacher. I thought she was going to have a meltdown because we were working with two-year-olds, and one of the two-year-olds had said that he wanted to write a song about penguins, and I was like, great. And I said, what do penguins do? And he said, bounce. And so we wrote a complete song about penguins bouncing because that's what penguins do, apparently. There's also my Nana's a Milk song, which has a great lyrics. Nana, 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 milk. But there's a bit in that was like, where does milk come from? Milk comes from cows. Where do bananas come from? Bananas come from horses, is the lyric, because that's what this three-year-old, who was a twin, and both the twins had gone away with their mum to write some lyrics for the Nana and Milk song. And she came back, she went, I'm so sorry, you don't have to use it. Please don't feel you have to use it. So it was like, so when I then added those lyrics in, he did turn to his mum and went, see? So I think being adaptable and being ready to try something new and different songs.
Wonderful. Yeah. Oh, fantastic. I was so enthralled, like, the na-na-na milk. It's important to be yourself, isn't it?
And I think that's definitely part of it as well. So, you know, so I've been doing some sessions online during particularly during the first lockdown, had a lot of parents and children on Zoom. And that was a very different experience. I liked the fact that youngest daughter was upstairs asleep in bed at 9:30 on a Monday morning, and I'd be shouting and singing really loudly. But you'd still got to be totally yourself and do, you know, so we created a whole dance based on a piece of one of the Mozart overtures that was about song structure. And so it had little bits for when they were doing this and big wide arms for this bit. And there's just nothing nicer than watching 18-month-old babies kind of on screen doing this because you've done it for enough weeks and they're still really enjoying it. And at the point where I would put that music on and they'd go and play somewhere else in their room, I'd go, okay, apparently we've finished doing that for now. We don't do that one anymore.
Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, I'm really loving these stories about how children, you know, can love music, you know, engaging with them in different themes and just apply that music is relevant to them. You can be a part of it.
And yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And part of their learning of other things as well, so that they're not just, it doesn't have to be just music for music's sake. It's how music can help as learn any other things as well. So, yeah, it's that, and it's how you can express yourself, what else you can be learning along the way.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you, Helen. Wonderful to speak to you today.
Pleasure.
More success to come for you.
Oh, thank
your
you.
Your work.
No, this has been lovely. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your time.
We asked members of the Wales Music Youth Forum to tell us about their first experience of music. You're going to hear from Blankface, Tori, then Holly.
I'll be honest, I don't really remember my first experience with music. I started singing when I was really young. And in general, I've just always been very creative and I liked sound. One of my oldest experiences with music is this ritual me and my family had going to church. Every Sunday on the way to church and after church, we would listen to this singer called Asha. So Asha is a Nigerian singer and I actually model a lot of like my acoustic Afro influences from her because every Sunday we just used to listen to Asha. And that was my oldest experience with music.
I was brought up surrounded by music. My mum and dad loved like a whole range of genres from classic rock, 90s Seattle scene grunge, Britpop, folk and dance. My mum's favourite ever artist is Tori Amos, a singer and pianist who she actually named me after, so her albums are on all the time. So I started listening to music properly quite young when there was nothing on TV. So I watched music channels and music videos all day from Kerrang, Clubland, all the MTV channels and like classic iconic music videos. I'd watch them all day and learn the dance moves for every song. My first memory of music was dancing as a baby to Beautiful Stranger by Madonna. It was like my favorite song ever. And that's just led me to loving a huge range of music today. Music's something we've always treasured in the house and it's always a highlight or a talking point of a conversation. It's like a real bonding experience for us all.
So I'm born in 97. Before I was born, my father used to play Prodigy, The Fat of the Land, to me as I was in my mum's womb. So when I was born, the only way that I could actually fall asleep was by them taking me for a drive and playing Smack My Bitch Up and I'd be fast asleep. So there's not many people can say that the Prodigy was their lullaby, but it would send me to sleep. So that's where my passion for dance came from. He used to play Fatboy Slim as well. And then my mum's an 80s baby, so she absolutely adores the 80s. So I was fortunate enough to inherit her CDs and records. And that's where my love for disco came from. So I kind of combined the two, disco and house. That's where my DJing genre comes from, really.
Yeah, I'm Lucy and I live and work up in Bangor in North Wales. I am, as you say, early years tutor for Codi Atar, Systema Cymru. And I also work as a freelance music practitioner with various different groups and ages of children. And I've recently been leading a residency for Ensemble Cymru in a local primary school.
Fantastic. Thank you for coming on our show today. A bit about your extensive biography for our listeners. Lucy graduated with a degree, first class honours, and subsequently an MA. Her instruments are the piano and clarinet. She has a great passion for music education. She was awarded a Winston Churchill Travelling Scholarship to research interactive music education in America, Germany, and Luxembourg. It's amazing to have you on the show, Lucy. Thank you for joining us. Wow, I'm just amazed by your biography. And we'd like to know a bit about your work.
Okay. Well, as you say, I went to America on a Winston Churchill travelling fellowship. And it was there that my interest in early years music started. I went to actually look at children's museums, which were, this was back in 2002, I think I went. And so over here, interactive education and interactive children's museums were still pretty new. But in America, they were already, you know, quite well established. So I was really interested to see how music could fit into that sort of environment. However, whilst I was in Seattle, I met with someone called Ted Rosenberger, who ran preschool music classes in his own home. And it was just so inspiring to see the reaction of the children to the music, to the songs, and moving with the music. And I just thought, this is what I need to do. This is what I need to do in the future when I come back to Wales. So that's when I started looking at for training courses, and I found out about CADAI music education. And that's all about introducing music by singing and using the voice, and very much linked to your own mother tongue, which is an interesting way of looking at things in a bilingual country as well. And then I also now use Dalcroze Eurythmics in my work, and that I find really complements the CADAI, because Dalcroze is about experiencing the music with your body and learning with your body. And that for young children is so important, because they always move. They don't want to sit still. And so if you can get them learning about music whilst they're moving, then that's really powerful.
So what are the ways, what are the movements that you do to engage with the children? I'd like to hear a bit more about them.
Well, for my work with Codi Atar, we work in two schools, and I work with the nursery reception year one and two children. And right from the beginning, we do a lot of songs with actions, or we're keeping a steady beat with different actions. They could be really small actions developing their small motor skills, or we could do really big actions. So you're trying to develop all of those different movement skills, and I might get them to hop or jump. So, for example, one of our favourite songs is "Mae hi'n bwrw glaw," which is "It is raining," and there's a splash in that song, which in the end we take out, because that's how we learn about rests and space in music. However, when the children are doing it, we like to pretend we're splashing in puddles. So we'll be jumping in the rest. Yeah, so just trying to get them to move and to really feel the music through all the moving and the actions.
That's so fascinating. Our theme for Amplify's podcast this month is, what age should we start enjoying music? Can it be from as little as toddlers, young children? Or do you appreciate it more when you're older? Just tell us a bit about your thoughts about this question. Do you think, like, from this age, it's really important to them, music? It can really benefit them?
Yes, I do. I mean, that's, I suppose, why I've decided to focus my career on music with these really young children. Because even in the womb, the fetus will be able to hear the sounds and hear the music. And we know that when babies are born, they react more to things that are familiar to them. So if the mum or the dad or someone in their environment that, has been singing or doing rhymes or playing music, or I don't know, going to a pop concert or something, or hearing something on the radio over and over again, those sort of music will be comforting to the children. So I think that it's right from the beginning. And it's not just, I suppose, about appreciating the music. It's also a way for them to communicate and a way for them to play. And yeah, it's just so important for so many different things. Not just, as you say, when you get older, maybe you feel that you appreciate it more. But I think that young children still appreciate it, but maybe in more of an immediate way than if we sat down and listened to some relaxing music and felt that we were having a bit more of a kind of spiritual experience.
The next question, I think, is why is it important to have music for early years?
Well, as I've said kind of before, there's so many different aspects of education that music can reach. I mean, I think, as I think you seem to be saying too, that music in itself is just so important for all of us as human beings. But when you think of it in broader education, well, when children are singing, they're learning language, they're learning rhyming, they're learning how to pronounce things. You can introduce different languages to children through song, and they just pick it up. Also, they're learning about communication skills without singing, just with, I suppose, responding to music. You're communicating in a way that doesn't need language. So you're taking that pressure away. If for really young children, it's quite difficult to form your ideas in language, well, you know, you can have a kind of musical conversation on a drum. So a child might be drumming and the adult working with them might be just copying them or just responding in some way. So you're having a dialogue in that way without the pressure of any words. And then, of course, music can help with moving, with dance, and you can respond to music by painting or drawing. There's so many things that elements of education that music can bring together.
Different experiences, yeah, different life skills. It's very interesting that, you know, the different skills, painting, art and language, all these things can come together with music, and it can bring, and even if you can't communicate, it's just that sense of belonging, like, oh, I can just, you know, communicate through this and they'll understand. So what have been the results of your work with early years, successes, your difficulties? Tell us a bit about your journey with working with early years with your music.
Okay, well, with Codiator, I suppose I see my role as I'm kind of laying the foundations, because in our project, we're aiming to get the children to be confident musicians who are playing instruments. But I focus on developing all those skills that they might need before they get an instrument put in their hands. So kind of almost helping them succeed, hopefully, because you know, if you're learning an instrument, you've got so much more to do as a child. If you've then got to read the music and understand everything, as well as trying to blow down an instrument, coordinate your fingers, make sure your mouth is in the right position for playing a brass instrument. It's really, when you think about it, there's so many different skills that you need to put together and so many ways in which your brain is having to kind of send messages to your body to tell it what to do. And I do find that using the ways that I work, you know, by the time they're in year two, they will be understanding how to read and write and interpret different basic rhythms. And they've got an understanding of pitch. And well, not just an understanding, because the young children have an understanding of pitch, but they can process it in a way that they could show you if that's a high note or that's a low note, you know, rather than just being able to tell you, oh, it's high. Yeah, so I think in the early years, in the kind of foundation stage, that's what I'm doing, laying the foundations for future learning in music.
What is a legacy that you'd like to leave behind with your work with early years?
Well, I'd like, generally for the children I work with, I try to introduce them to as wide a range of music possible. I'm more classically trained, so I love classical music, but I also listen to a lot of pop music as well, and some jazz and folk music as well. So I suppose I'd like that the children could enjoy all types of music, and whatever they come with from home, that we can share that love of music, and that can continue with them for the rest of their lives.
I definitely think that you've just answered the question, what age we can be enjoying music from any age, and young children especially, it's important to remember that they can. You know, because music also helps with mental health and things like that, and morale and confidence. Just, it's like you're saying, these different skills you're bringing in to their lives to improve it for the better. What's your youngest child that you've worked with, actually?
Well, actually, next week, as part of our work in the community, I'll be going to work in a nursery, and I'll have probably 3 months old babies there. So, you know, right from the very beginning, really tiny ones.
3 months. That's incredible. Wow. That's amazing to create that sort of impact for them. All the best with your work, Lucy. Thank you for joining us on the show today, and all the best with your work, your endeavours.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been great.
More from Wales Music Youth Forum on their early experiences of music. Now we'll hear from Karis, Ella and Andrew.
My first experience of music was actually driving along in the car with my dad, singing along to Stranglers and singing along to The Cure. I remember so vividly doing that and then progressing onto Avril Lavigne, and that's like where I sort of spiralled into my own music taste. I remember when I was about 11 or 12 going to see The Stranglers as the first ever show I went to, and I was just amazed. That was my first ever experience in terms of my first ever artist I heard. In terms of actually like playing guitar, my dad always used to play bass, and I was always quite a musical kid. I saw guitars and I thought rock bands are cool, so I wanted to be a rock star, you know? So I started to learn guitar.
One of the earliest memories that I have of music is my granddad playing his guitar while he was babysitting me, and there's videos of me singing and dancing, and he'd sing like his own songs that he'd made, which is really cool. And I think that's where I first started to play music. He used to teach me bits of guitar when I was little. That's where I started off with music. But I think one experience that grew my love for music was through my dad. And he would play his playlist that he'd made to us in the car. And it would be like from stupid little songs about Triangle Men to Radiohead and Peter Gabriel.
A lot of my early memories were tied into music videos, actually. I think it was the visuals that actually got me before the music. I remember being obsessed with MTV. That's all I really used to watch when I was younger. And then as I got a bit older, then when Channel U, you know, Channel AKA kind of had its time, which was more UK-based, I used to love those videos as well. But yeah, some of the early videos that really made me fascinated and caught my attention were a lot of the Gorillaz videos, obviously, because I just hadn't seen anything like them at the time. And also one I remember really vividly, like loving, I loved the song, was Red Hot Chili Peppers' Californication. I love that song and I love the music video for that. Still to this day, I think that's maybe in the top 10 most innovative music videos I have ever seen, especially for its time. So yeah, a lot of my early memories was tied into that.
We're very excited to have Emma on the programme. She runs Cardiff County and Vale of Glamorgan Music Service and is also creating an early years album in collaboration with Flying Start, an education medium in schools. Emma, would you like to say a few words about yourself to our audience, please? Thank you.
Hello, Effie. It's really lovely to be here. And it's, what a happy topic, music in the early years. So I cannot remember when I wasn't making music. I used to embarrass my parents at church at the age of one, probably singing really out loud. when you have that around you, it's such a joy, isn't it? And all of us as musicians that have been lucky enough to have been nurtured and supported by families, communities, just want to share that with as many people as possible. So it's really nice to be connecting with Anthem and connecting with others in Wales to make that happen.
Thank you, Emma. It's so great to hear you on the programme and to get your views on this very important topic. A bit about Emma, a performing musician and composer, passionate about inclusive music education. The Music Service is a fantastic tribe of musicians who care about social justice and want to bring good music to as many people as possible. She is also engaged with Flying Start with primary schools. They were commissioned to create a set of songs around child development goals, which is fantastic, from noughts to threes to thrive. So this resource reflects the many styles of music and cultures and sounds for young children. Emma, I'm just amazed by your biography. It's just wonderful to have you on the show. Our theme for Amplify's podcast this month is what age should we start enjoying music? I'd like to ask you more about the work you do, Emma. And it's interesting to know that you are working to create an early years album with Flying Start. Tell us more about your work, please.
Thank you, Iffy. That was a wonderful introduction. The work with Flying Start, we were approached to see if we could put into song some of the early years goals. Health visitors were finding that it's all a bit white coat about the development milestones of children. You know, can they climb stairs or can they stack blocks? It's all very boring. And also the Flying Start, I don't know if you know about that, it's a national initiative across Wales for the thriving of young people. And they have these wonderful coordinators and they involve parents and so on. And they were telling us that a lot of the material they had was a little bit soggy. You know, it's a little bit sort of, you know, as if Blue Peter did an album, you know. So the stages of growth were called the SOGs. So I thought, well, we do sort of now that's what I call SOGs kind of approach. The team I have, you're right, I'm so lucky. They were all based in Cardiff. Jamie's brother Christian used to work with me. Jamie is from Pontypool. And he came into the tribe fairly early on and he brought in Jolien and a couple of other people. And at one time they referred to me as Cardiff Dogs Home for retired touring musicians. I did find that there are touring musicians out there with incredible skills. I mean, they've played Glastonbury, they've done Wembley and so on, and they have these skills and they want to be able to bring them to the classroom or to the community in a way. And all they needed was a little bit of tweaking about, you know, risk assessments and all the things that go with it and all the stuff that I have to do every day. So that partnership worked really well. We had a folk group called Seamus Last Words and we had a lot of fun and as a tribe. And we still work together from time to time. But the idea around that resource was write the kind of music people would want to listen to anyway. And also bringing in music for different cultures. That's definitely part of what we do with the music development side of the Music Service. We also wrote the resource for WOMEX a few years back, the education resource for that. We all have influences from music all around the world. We're all a bit, we all have an inner Peter Gabriel, I think. And it was important to me to have songs that not only dealt with the different skills, but did in a way that introduced children to music they wouldn't hear on the radio. So there is one rave track, and that's mine. There's a dance track. But equally, there's a meditation track that I've put some Indian flute and ragas on it and things like that. And so there are some that sound a bit reggae. There are some that sound a bit 80s. And I think people are more likely to use it if it's fun and doesn't sound annoying, you know.
Are you ready to jump, jump, jump? Just your smile makes it all worthwhile. Your cheeky grin gently sleeps. Hello, friends. Did you hear about me?
Brush your hair, brush your teeth again, sit in a chair. Can you copy me? Can you do just what I do?
Oh, it's amazing to hear this work with Flying Start. What an incredible venture. And to bring in different cultures to the music for children. Because you can get used to the kind of surroundings that you're, but other cultures of music can broaden your awareness or thinking about music, playing music. I just want to know, yeah, what was your thinking behind bringing in the different cultures for the children?
I think most of the settings we work in are multicultural, and a lot of the material before was very sort of Western-centric, very straight-laced, and didn't take into account the kind of music these children may have heard in their communities or with their families and so on. In the school I think we work in recently, Ninian Park, there are 37 languages spoken there. And educate young people into the range of music that's out there. Because what they hear on the radio is very limited, isn't it? Children do enjoy that, and they're fascinated by the geography of music. The other reason I bring many cultures into my practice anyway, and we always have, is not just the tokenism of, oh, let's just sing a few African songs on Black History Month or whatever, but the idea that we don't own music, we don't own how it's taught and how it's thought about. In other countries, it's thought about differently. So, for instance, if you take the drum circle, that's a really nice way of teaching people anything. Even if I've used the global pedagogy of let's sit in a circle and create a community around music, rather than here's a page with a crotchet on it and I want you to count up to four. The music belongs to the world, and we have no right to say it has to be taught in this way.
Oh, incredible. I love that answer, that we don't own music. It belongs to everyone, and there's all these different cultures that make music special and make music accessible. And it's just wonderful that you're able to teach the children this kind of approach so they can be open-minded about it.
Yes.
Yeah, they can be open-minded about their music making and who they want to work with for the future. And what you made was a really good point too. You need to make it fun for children. And I think they can appreciate music from this young age if they engage in it with their own way. And it's fun and accessible for them. What are your views? Can you appreciate music, you know, from young age, 0 to 3 years old? Yeah.
From babies. Babies love music. And they particularly, there was some research done that mothers' musical skills improve when they have babies because they sing to them. Babies, and if you notice the way in which people speak to babies, they use a sing-song voice. So it's like a call and response, isn't it? And the very early experiences are that.
And it's that sense of engaging children. You have to be inventive, you know, using actions and things like that to engage their mind to perform the music.
I think it's very, very important not to underestimate them. And not to make assumptions about they will or won't like. Funnily enough, there's quite a big assumption that maybe children might not want to listen to jazz, or they might not like classical music. And the truth is, they might not have heard any. I played a set, I don't know if you're aware of the BBC 10 pieces, a fantastic resource. And I did it with a school in an area of Cardiff, I think it was Lanrumney. And there are 10 different pieces, and really imaginative, proper presenters, videos and all the rest of it. And played all these pieces, and I had drawings of it was a night on a bear mountain, and they didn't know it was B-A-R-E, so they drew bears on mountains designing the CD cover. They adored it. But some of the children, their favourite piece wasn't the trendy stuff. It was Zadok the Priest. They had never heard anything like it. None of them had ever been in a cathedral. You could see Land of Cathedral Spire from their classroom playground if you looked across. So it was so outside their experience, and they were just stunned by this Zadok. And I suppose people hear that kind of music in gaming, they hear it in advertising, they hear it in films, and they can take it, you know. But it was amazing. It wasn't the one I thought would be the most spectacular, but they just sort of went, wow, that's like the voices of heaven, you know.
Classical music. It's incredible, isn't it? The voices of heaven, as you say, they really do touch the soul. And I know many children who are interested in classical music, but they don't have the opportunities. You know, it's very expensive to get lessons. And what would be the kind of things you would, you know, say to help these children access classical music, for example?
I think we're very lucky nowadays because of social media, and because of YouTube and things like that. It's an awful lot easier for children to go out and find things that they like. So I think curating listening lists would be quite good. The Association Board have done a thing called Minute of Listening. It's pretty good. And obviously there's 10 pieces and getting children to listen around. With regards to lessons and expense, certainly within the music service, we really do try to keep it as affordable as possible. And I know there's hopefully good news coming soon to support that universal access that we want. But in the meantime, we don't let anything get in the way if we find a talented child or a child with potential. The talent is the wrong word because sometimes people think people are talented and it's just that they've had a lot of nurturing and a lot of experience. There are different ways of looking for it. And usually it's the children who can't put an instrument down or who want to experiment or, you know, they put the elastic bands on the chest of drawers at home and make sound. Not necessarily one that's going to get an A in GCSE. It's about that curiosity and passion. When we go into schools, we do as much as we can with whole class teaching. And then we encourage the schools to support children who might not be able to afford it with pupil deprivation grants or, I mean, a term of lessons, group lessons are about a fiver a lesson now, so it's not too bad. I think there's a perception it's more expensive than it is. But when we find someone with real ability, we will challenge a school on their more able and talented policy because in general, schools have spotted maybe more able and talented in sport or in maths, and they don't always know how to spot it in music.
Well, thank you for opening your doors like that to the children so they can access it in their own way. The next question, well, you've kind of answered it. Why is it important to have music for early years or older? What are your thoughts on that so our audience can understand? Yeah.
Importance of early years. That's the time when children are most open and less influenced by their peers. They're less likely to be told what they can and can't like. As you get older, as you know, the peer pressure starts to hit in and it's not cool to like this or it's not cool to like that. I can remember, for instance, hiding the fact that I did ballet when I was a teenager because that wasn't cool. So if you're getting people's curiosity there before they have to worry about how it looks to other people. I come from an era where you put your favourite bands and wrote them on your pencil case in school and things like that. And you got caught up with identity. But if you had a solid sense of who you were and what music you wanted, you weren't that bothered about everybody else. And people couldn't put you down as easily. I also think it's really important when you say about later, people need to know it's never too late. I don't like the child prodigy thing. That's a myth. That's a Hollywood story and it's rubbish. I'll tell you now, I came back into serious playing after a big life change. I was 49 and a year later I was giving a recital in Tokyo. It's never too late to get good at music and to get your chops back. So I think next on my agenda would be a blow your dust off your instrument adults orchestra or something for families to rediscover it together.
This is amazing. Thank you, Emma. Honestly, it's been wonderful to have you and your extensive programme, your biography on the show.
I think there's no limit to what music can bring to people's lives. And I will leave you with one comment from a child of about 8 years old in a school in Nottingham. I was doing different voices for warm-ups and we did a robot voice. And I asked the children, how do you do a robot voice? And they said, you take all the music out of it.
Oh my God, I love that comment. Emma, thank you for your wise words of insight to our audience today. It's been a pleasure having you. This has been Emma Coulthard, everyone. Please follow her, check out her work. We'll put links to the show reel and the examples of your music that you've given us on this program. Honestly, what a joy to speak to you and all the best in your ventures.
Thank you very much, Ippy.
Amplify. Youth Music in Wales is produced by Anthem Cronfa Gerth Cymru Music Fund Wales, creating a Wales in which music can empower every young life. It is project managed by Tori Silman and Rian Hutchins, with studio production by Ivan Pritchard, Music by Blankface and original concept by Iffy Owobi. Find out more about Anthem and the Wales Music Youth Forum at www.anthem.wales.